This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Oh boy, you are pilgrims in an unholy land.
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Great warrior!
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
This is the 2v2 podcast. Daddy, Dave, and Steve are awesome!
We are officially recording right now. Seth, I need to talk a little bit anyway so I can get a good level on you. So, because I know you talk softer than Michael, so
I'm a soft talker.
So soft.
Yeah. Anyway, so they had G1 Transformers. I'm the only person who likes Rodimus Prime.
Yeah, it's because he's a van.
Well,
he's like a minivan.
Yeah, he's like a minivan, which
he's
is
got
why
like
people
flames. So he's a cool minivan.
Yeah, which they're like, hey, let's put those on.
Right, flames make everything badass.
Well, here's the reason why I like him. There was a comic book series that had done a run for a while, and it was after Optimus Prime had come back. He returned as the leader of the Autobots. So that was like, well, what do you do with Rodimus Prime? Because he didn't turn back to Hot Rod. He was still Rodimus Prime.
Oh, okay.
So he became like a negotiator, like a figurehead for the Transformers on a galactic like.
So he was like going out and spreading the good word of the Transformers
went from Princess Leia was like, General Leia. She was like Senator Leia. Mission.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he turned into like this senator for the Autobots.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's a really cool concept, and that makes perfect sense to. Like,
so he's going out and getting hammered and like taking advantage of less than. Yeah. Never mind.
Like, no,
I was going to talk trash about politics there for a second. And I was like, I don't want to go there.
Ambassador. That's what he. That's
there
what
we
turned,
go. Okay.
That's what I was looking for. He turned like Spock. He went from being like a dude into military dude into an ambassador.
Okay.
So that's what Rodimus Prime had turned into. So I was like, I was digging that idea, like, because you can't only Optimus Prime could be Optimus Prime. That was part of the problem.
Well, I was going to say, like, if you have two primes, it's like, that seems like that could be a bad thing also. It's like,
Well, because you have the Matrix of Leadership, that went back to Optimus Prime, but for some reason, like, Rodimus didn't, like, turn back.
Oh, okay.
So he became, like, an
so ambassador. Hot Rod was Rodimus Prime?
Yeah, Hot Rod turned into Rodimus Prime.
Okay. So why did they change him then? Because wasn't Hot Rod like a Ferrari or something like that beforehand?
Yeah, but when he gets the leadership, the Matrix of Leadership, it changes
him into something lame.
Into something bigger. So, like, I forgot. Optimus, there's a whole storyline of Optimus Prime getting the Matrix of Leadership.
Yeah.
And he changes form into Optimus Prime. That's not his original setup.
Yeah.
So,
well, I just remember, like, at least Optimus Prime, like, he was a truck, and every kid, like, there's something about, like, the 80s, the early 80s and 70s, where there was, like, that trucker culture or whatever, where it was, like,
we were on the tail end of trucker culture. That was more, like, I think our dad's.
Yeah. Well, I was, like,
well,
my
dad, your dad's a bit older than mine, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Dad's retired now. He's, like, 60-something.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to tell his age because he probably wouldn't want me to tell his age. But yeah,
my dad's in his 60s, and retired too. But they had that like Smokey and the Bandit, like,
which I watched that last night, by the way.
Did you really?
Yeah, dude, I hadn't seen Smokey and the Bandit in so long. I was like, what am I going to watch? And I was going to watch. A buddy of mine told me to check out Land of the Lost, and
the original.
No, God, no. I watched the original series whenever I was a kid, but I'm talking about the movie with Will Ferrell and Danny McBride.
Okay.
Which I love Danny McBride and I love Will Ferrell. It's kind of funny that I have not seen the movie yet. And I have not seen the movie, but I love both those guys. Like, they're both freaking hilarious. And I haven't seen it yet. And I was sitting there flipping around. And right before my internet went out, and I was flipping around. And I was like, oh, Smokey and the Bandit. And it's like, I guess I've been on like a Burt Reynolds kick since Burt Reynolds died, because I watched The Last Movie Star like a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Which was an excellent movie. And it's free on Amazon right now to watch it. So if you haven't seen it yet, definitely check it out. Like, it's almost like follows Burt Reynolds' like life story. And in fact, I heard an interview with the director where he actually wrote the movie for Burt to play. And it's little things are laced in there that actually happened in his life, except for like the locations are kind of changed. Like Burt Reynolds played, I think, for the University of Florida or Florida State, one of the two.
Yeah, something like that.
And he hurt his knee and couldn't play football anymore. And in the movie, he hurt his knee and couldn't play football anymore, so he decided to take up acting and stuff like that. And it even had like Burt Reynolds' original like first wife in the movie, who played his first wife and all like this good stuff. So it's kind of one of those. It's like, oh, tear. I mean, but it was a good, it was like a good thing or whatever. Like, there's this, like, just really, but anyways, Smokey and the Bandit was freaking awesome. And you forget just on how, like, Sally Field, like, she was actually pretty hot, dude. Like,
oh, yeah.
She,
oh, no, yeah, no.
She had a great butt.
Yeah. Sally Field was smoking back in the day.
Your mama sure cares about your education, boy. Yeah. That's what I think of Sally Field, or I think Sally Field nowadays is she was Forrest Gump's mom. But, anyways, Transformers, I got you off whenever you were going.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I was just, that was one of those things, like, I had gone to this booth and they had, hey. Oh,
there's a dog.
There's a dog's tail.
She was keeping time for us. All right, that's enough. Go. Go. Or lay down, one of the two. She's getting hard of hearing also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think she does it most of the times on purpose, where she's just like, I can't hear you. No.
Like, yeah, when, you can. I don't know if I told you, my parents' dog passed about a month ago.
Oh, and, no, I didn't. Sorry about that, dude. That sucks.
Yeah. And she got that way, you know, the hind legs thing. And then it's like almost the hearing goes right along with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just got to a point where you had to, like, stomp on the floor to get her attention. And then she was, like, scared of you, and you're like,
you're like, no, I'm trying to get you to come here and let me pet you for a second. Yeah. See, my dog, she won't leave you alone. Like, Sal, like, you walk into the room and she's like, you have free hands, scratch my butt.
Yeah.
And that's basically, and it's not really her butt, it's just that base where the back and the tail meets. Like, any dog does that, though. Just about any dog's like, hey, scratch right there, because that always itches. I think tails cause them to itch, maybe?
I don't know.
That's a medical fact. Yeah, I don't know. It's totally a lie. Anyways,
the fur intersects there and crosses over.
Yeah, exactly. So I was gonna show you these guys, man. I've been doing some buying here lately, and we'll talk about what you picked up yesterday also. Oh, by the way, everybody, welcome to 2BT. I'm David.
I'm Adam.
Yes, we are sans Michael and sans Steven. They both
Dave's
got busy.
Slumming it with me today.
Yeah. well, it was going to turn out it was actually going to be me, you, and Michael. I just thought it would be fun to bring you in and have us all three record.
Yeah, because I've not met him.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of funny because he like loves you. He's like, he tells me all the time, he goes, Adam's my favorite member of 2BT. And I was like, well, Adam,
I think it's the higher tone. I think it's the higher pitch.
That's what it is, man.
Everybody else on the podcast download.
We're like peanut butter and jelly. You and I, we move on the whale.
I have a horrible voice. I have a horrible voice for as much podcasting as we've done through the years. I have like the worst voice for people to listen to. And I have, and this is technically something because of audio engineering that I know.
Yeah.
I have weird tones.
Oh, yeah.
So it's always hard to dial me in.
We need you to get a little bit closer to that microphone, too.
As you've discovered, it's hard to dial me in.
You can slide that back closer to the edge of the table.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do that, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I became sort of this guy who, if you wanted your show to sound perfect, you would get me on the microphone because it's so hard to dial me in. By the time you get normal people up on stage to talk, they sound excellent.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I know it's always hard to dial me in.
It's kind of funny because
and I used to have to do that with Radcast, too. Oh, yeah. All the time on my voice, I would have to, like, I'd either boost it and it would be way too much and it would be just, like, all over the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is not what we, you know, it wasn't like, hey, let's even these tones out. It was just like, it was either way too loud or way too soft, as I already
Yeah, you know, it happens. Like I said, I think the it mixes well, because you have like the high and then you have the low, and it's just like, it's kind of like a The Sound of Music song. You have the high, I have the low. I don't know. That's not Sound of Music. That's more like doe, a deer. Anyways, I was going to show you these figures, man. I've been on like a figure hunt here lately, and it's like, it's kind of funny. Like the one day that you and I went out and to do like a video, we didn't really, I mean, we found a few cool things at the toy show and stuff like that. But here lately, man, like I've just been like having all sorts of luck. Like I found that guy. I talked about that one the other day with Michael. That's the Gamorrean Guard, man. And I just played I woke up on like Saturday morning, last Saturday, at like six something, or I guess it was a week before, like six something in the morning, and I couldn't go back to sleep. So I was like, you know what? Today's a good day for breakfast tacos. So I got up. Like,
every day is a good day for breakfast tacos. Dude,
tell me about it. Like, I don't know if you've had the chorizo egg and cheese from Fuzzy's, but it's pretty blasted amazing, dude. Oh, my God.
I don't think there's a place, at least in town, that I haven't hit for breakfast tacos.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And even the worst breakfast taco is
still better.
A good breakfast
yeah,
taco.
Yeah, exactly. That might be different in the land of like Chicago or someplace up north or whatever.
That's a possibility. I was going to compare that to something else, but I can't say that.
Yeah, right. Anyways, so like I got up like stupid early and I hit Target like as soon as they opened up. I got there actually early enough that like I pulled into the parking lot and there was people still waiting at the door. And I was like, it's Saturday. What are you doing waiting at the door? I was like, I'm not really in that big of a hurry. Cause I looked, you got to do the collector thing where you look at the people and you're like, none of them are going back to the Star Wars section. But even though whenever I get there that early, I still have this weird little game that plays in the back of my head where I'm all like, somebody's going back there right now, going to look for the Gamorrean Guard. I bet they've got two and I need two. And there's only two in the whole area. And actually, whenever I got back there, there was nobody else in the Star Wars section. But there was only two Gamorrean guards on the shelf, so I grabbed both of them.
So you were the guy that you were scared of.
I was the guy that I was scared of, making this whole fictional character that looks like Dick Dastardly back there twirling his mustache going, meh, meh, meh. I'll take both of the Gamorrean guards, and I'm going to open them up and give them to my kids, or whatever. It's like, what station
pro? Flip them on eBay for three times.
Oh, my God, dude. Don't let me catch you scalping, because I'll scalp you.
That's a problem in the game industry too, man.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Scalpers are hideous. That's
It's ridiculous, dude. It's absolutely ridiculous.
That's what's nice about the Nintendo Classic and Super Nintendo Classic editions. So when the first NES Classic Edition came out, those things got scalped like horrible.
Oh yeah.
Like the day they came out, I was seeing like Facebook posts for $300. First of all.
Yeah, I'm not gonna pay that, especially for like 30 games for the NES or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like 30 games or something like that. And, I mean, they're easy enough to hack and then, like, add games to it.
Yeah.
But, just the price alone. So when Nintendo, like, finally announced that they were like, oh, we're gonna re-release it. There's gonna be plenty available until Christmas of, 2018 and all that stuff. And it was funny because they did the re-release. Scalpers came out and tried to do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw that. And
nobody was buying them because you could still go to your Target or whatever and pick them up for the price that they're supposed to be, like $59.
Yeah, I can still go to Target and pick them up basically right now. Like, yeah. I was there again, I think, like, well, I went to a different one because Target's killing me, by the way. Target's got three exclusive figures. One is the Gamorrean Guard. One is the a Bespin Escape Leia. Another one is Moloch from Solo. Now I don't need the Moloch, even though I saw the Moloch yesterday. I don't need the Moloch because it's part of the newer stuff and I'm not collecting the newer stuff now. Like I was all in, like all the way up to The Last Jedi. And it's just that it's getting to be, as well as you see the shelves here behind me, it's just going to be where it's just too much. I can't keep up with it, like with space, and I can't keep up with it with money. So anything that's OT, I'm like, heck yeah. And even if they did some more Rogue One figures, I would totally be on it. But Last Jedi figures and everything else from that on out, I might get for Episode 9 that's coming out. Like, if they do, like, another Rey and all, like, this good stuff, I might get those figures, but that's really going to be it. Like, unless it's OT, I'm not going to buy it.
I mean, I don't see any Rose Tico.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, that's about, I don't have a DJ either, and I've seen him all over the place. Yeah. That's whenever I quit. Like, I was like, okay, I'll get, like, the main guys. Like, I've got, like, Ray, And I don't have the new version of Finn in the Imperial, not Imperial, but the First Order outfit or whatever. I don't have that one just because I was like, okay, no, I'm cutting it off right here.
Oh, and I don't have the other Poe. That would be kind of a cool one to have, though. I would think.
I do kind of want it, but I have to set boundaries on myself just because, especially because stuff like this, like I've got.
Does it come with like the helmet with the blood handprint?
No, I've actually got that one. It's over here behind the other Poe, behind the other Finn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm talking about the one where he's dressed in the First Order officer uniform. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it's cool. I dig it, but I'm not going to get it because it's just, it's after my cutoff point. So I was like, eh, I don't need that many incarnations of Poe, of not Poe, but Finn. I do kind of want to get another, I wish I could get another Finn figure and have like the First Order trooper armor. Just get another First Order trooper, pop the head off it, pop a Finn head on top of it.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were talking about. That yeah. There was one, but if they didn't come out with one like that.
No, they didn't. That's what's crazy. It's kind of like the Kylo Ren behind me here. Like I told Michael the other day, I was like, well, this isn't one I kind of customized because that set that they have that was a Kmart exclusive that had came with Kylo Ren with his mask on fighting Rey. Well, he didn't fight Rey with a mask on, so I had to buy a whole nother maskless Kylo Ren figure and pop the head off of it and pop it on that one because they didn't do it right. And I just can't have, I gotta have screen accuracy.
There you go.
But,
that sounds like a toy that would sell.
Yeah.
As.
Right? It does. I don't know, man. I don't know what Hasbro's doing. I will say I gotta give Hasbro props because I think I have a new favorite figure. And I picked this dude up the other day and, I've actually talked about him on the show, but I hadn't opened him up until now, and it's the Rebel Fleet Trooper. But dude, just take a gander at that. Like his helmet actually does come off, so if you want to take that helmet off, you can slide the chin strap.
I can
up.
Never get that stuff to go back on once I take.
That's
it
all good. I've got no problem getting it back on, but yeah, it's just the face sculpt on it's freaking awesome. The gun itself, like the paint app on the gun is flawless, which on like the little small weapons like that, you usually have some issues. And if you notice, he's got the Death Star plans from Rogue One in his hand. Take a close look at those Death Star plans, dude. They've got some serious small details in that thing, like painted and stuff, which they probably did that with like a wash, but still like it looks freaking good. Like dude, it is like an excellent, excellent, excellent figure. Like Hasbro knocked it out of the park with that one, man. Like I'm super stoked about that one. Like I said, that's probably like my new favorite figure right now too. And if you look at his face, you remember the dude at the beginning of A New Hope who's like, you could like the close-up of his face as the door's being cut out by the Imperials and he does that like squint like he's like super serious or whatever.
Yeah,
that's who he's modeled on.
Yeah,
and you can tell actually from the face sculpt, like they did a great job on the face sculpt. Another one that I picked up was the Bespin Escape Leia, which is probably like the best face sculpt that they've done of Leia right now to date as well. Like, I know, well, they did a really good job on the Slave Leia one, but if you turn around and you look at the one behind you on that shelf where I've got the 40th anniversary figures, I know that's a stretch. But if you look at the face sculpt on that figure compared to this one, like, it's horrible. That is just a travesty, man. And then I also picked up freaking General Veers. And this dude was really cool because this armor right here is removable. The only problem with the armor being removable, it's got this little belt that goes around his waist here. And the way that his tunic and stuff like that is designed, it's almost impossible to clap that belt shut and then have his armor straight. And then once you go to straighten his armor, the belt pops. And you're just like, well, the hell with it. But he's got a hat that interchanges with his helmet. So you can have him in like Imperial.
You can have him as an Imperial or you can have him as the.
Yeah, you can have him as like on the Death, not Death Star, but on the Star Destroyer or on, inside the AT-AT.
Yeah.
So, of course, I've got him in his armor just because he looks cool. And it just, dude, like, like you can tell from like the Imperial costumes that they just use like leftover German army costumes from like all the movies and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
But like even whenever it comes to like his helmet there, like it's very, very apparent that that's like the that's a German officer helmet. Yeah, you know,
it's like a pit helmet.
Yeah, exactly. It's freaking awesome. But those have been the three that I've gotten here lately. And like I said, like yesterday was just a good day for me. Like I went to Plano They did the Void is the name of the place. It's called the Void. And I guess there's like multiple locations, not just around the U.S. They're mostly in the U.S., but I think there's one in Dubai. So technically they can say that they're around the world. And it's a fully, immersive VR experience. Like, it was really cool, man. Like, I was kind of like, I wasn't really sure what we were going to get with this, but you walk in and they give you like a little instructional video and all like this good stuff. And it's Captain Cassian Andor sitting there talking to you. And he's telling you like, we got to go into this Imperial facility and we got to get this crate and blah, blah, blah. And all like this good stuff. And it's like, all right, cool. This will be neat. Of course, everybody talks to you like it's like a ride at Disney or whatever, to where it's like, okay, rebels, are you ready to go? And blah, blah, blah. And so yeah. you're like, all right, cool. And so you go through that orientation, which is just like maybe a minute or two. And then you go back into another room and they've got like all the VR gear, like sitting there, like in racks or whatever, because it's actually pretty heavy. And it's a vest that you put on. And then, of course, a helmet. And it's, you know, total sensory deprivation, to where it's like it blocks out your vision and you've got noise canceling headphones on, but there's microphones in. So you can talk to your squad, and also the person like who's helping you get geared up can talk to you as well. And so you get all geared up, you get your helmet on, get it all set up, and then they take you to another little like holding pen and they shut the door, and that's whenever you flip your, well, you, they, you flip your visor down and then they shut the door, and then that's whenever everything kind of takes off. And it's like really cool, man, to the fact where it's like you're sitting in this room. It doesn't like shake around or anything like that, but like you're sitting in this thing that, you know, you look around and it's just like VR. Everything around you is now the game. You can look at your hands. The only difference is like you look down and you don't see your body, but the other three members, it's a four-member squad, the other three members of your squad, you can see them completely, totally. So you have awareness of where everybody is at all times. And in fact, so much to the fact that, like, the people that I was with, their kid went, and I think he's maybe, like, 12, 11 years old. Like, he's about, like, 4 feet tall or whatever. And so, like, his size was down to his even size in the game and stuff like that. So,
I was going to ask, did they have a big and tall setup for you?
Well, I was able to do it. So, they obviously got it working. But like all the walls have sensors and all like this good stuff. So the game starts and you like get off the shuttle and you're on Mustafar, however you want to pronounce it. And as you're on Mustafar, you go out and you're these stormtroopers and you're on this freaking, little skiff thing going over to basically Vader's house, Vader's castle, whatever you want to call it. And there's wind blowing. You can feel the wind blowing on your face, and there's smoke. The smoke smells like barbecue, but like there's smoke. It's definitely scented in the wind that's blowing on your face. And not only that, there's also heat. Like, they actually had heat in there to where it's like, this is actually pretty freaking warm, enough to make me sweat. So I was like, wow. Granted, it doesn't take me a lot to be, you know, get sweaty, but
smells
still.
Smells like Anakin in here.
Is that the reason why you stay here? You're like, smells good. But, no, man, it was like super cool because, like I said, even all the walls have sensors in them. So everything, like, you go up to this one part and you like pull down this lever, and the lever's actually there on the wall for you to pull down, and it senses as you pull it down. There's another console with some buttons where you gotta like break into this vault or whatever, and you hit the sequence of buttons, which is basically like playing Simon is what it was, but there was actually buttons there on the wall. So whenever you reached out to touch the button on the screen, there was actually a button there on the wall for you to touch also in the same exact location. You know, it was very, very cool. It's a little bit short. It's $30 to do it. It's a little bit short on time, but the experience itself was totally worth the $30. Totally worth it, man. Loved it.
What kind of time frame are you looking at?
Like
5-10 minutes or?
Yeah, it's about 10 minutes. Maybe a little bit. It's somewhere between actually 5 and 10, so probably like 8, maybe 10 minutes, but it wasn't over 10 minutes.
Messing up the button presses on purpose to stay longer.
No, I think it would have probably just gone ahead and defaulted and opened or whatever. But like, you know, we walked in and you go into the
boring conversation anyway, just blow it open.
Right. That's exactly what I said. But yeah, I was, you know, you walk into this one part and you're in the drop shuttle or the drop ship or whatever you want to call it. And there's actually K2SO standing there in the corner or whatever. And like one of my people that I was with actually walked up and touched K2, and they're like, oh my God, he's really there. And like, you walk up and it looks just like a, you know, computer generated image, but you reach out and touch it, and it felt like freaking K2SO standing there. So it was, it was really neat, dude. Really, really cool. I would actually like to go do it again, but I think this was the final weekend for that one. And they've got like another one coming up that's Nicodemus, which is like a scary game that I'm totally out on. But they have one that's coming up after that that sounds even just as cool, which is Ghostbusters.
And oh, okay. I was
like, that would be awesome because you already got this vest on, right? And the vest actually has sensors. There's about like 6 sensors on the front. And I think there's like maybe 2 or 4 in the back. The back is mainly a battery pack because it's, you've got like
full mobility.
Yeah. You've got full mobility. You're actually walking around through this entire thing the entire time, right? And you're basically, I mean, it's not like it's a giant setup because there's probably just like 4 rooms that they've got set up in like a square that they've just got you going around in like figures or whatever. But like, it's, you know, you've got this pack on the entire time. So like playing the Ghostbusters would be really cool because it already feel like you've got a, you know, a proton pack on your back.
There you go.
But this thing actually has like sensors on it. There's like I said, I think there's like 6 in the front and like maybe 2 or 4 in the back. So actually whenever you get hit with something like it, I got shot with by one of the stormtroopers at one point in time and it actually vibrated on my chest in the area that I got shot at. And I was like, whoa, it scared the hell out of me at first because I didn't know I was going to do it. And I was like, wow, that's really cool, man. Very, very neat. So if you've got a void in your area and you see like something interesting, just go check it out just for the experience because it was very neat. They should like give me a free ticket since I gave them such a beautiful review just now.
Like, review, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still my biggest VR experience was back in like 2002.
Oh yeah.
Playing Pac-Man VR and it was awful.
Were you like taking your arms and doing like the,
no, you run through the maze but it's like so confusing to get through and it's not, and you're not running through a maze. You have like a joystick in your hand and you're moving forward and back and stuff.
Oh,
like
really?
That. So it was at the time, I'm sure was really impressive.
Yeah.
But I was not impressed.
Yeah. You haven't played my VR setup here, have you?
No, I haven't done any of that.
Yeah, we'll have to do that sometime for sure. I got to let you play the Rogue One VR where you're flying the X-Wing. It's freaking amazing.
Okay. That sounds...
It's not as cool as what that one at the Void, but again, their setup is probably like $10,000 a person or whatever.
No, I went to the $5 store, picked up a VR headset that you put your phone in.
Oh, yeah.
And then you ride a roller coaster on YouTube or something like that. And I was like, okay.
How did that work out for you?
It's not a thing. I mean, it was like, okay, I get where some people would really dig on that.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's, you know, I had to take my phone out and then like clean it over again because I could see like hair and fingerprints and yeah, oil, whatever. And then like pop it back in and I didn't get it like lined up just perfectly. And then I had to work on the eye things until, I mean, it was just like,
yeah.
And,
yeah. Yeah, see, that's the only issue, man.
But because... I figured that was the equivalent of buying, like, one of those books that used to have, like, the blue and red ink, and then you put the, like, 3D glasses on.
And be like, ooh,
it would last 3D. About a day, and you're like, oh, it's 3D.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what I thought was so cool whenever they started doing the 3D movies again or whatever, because I was like, what is this? So they're going to be the whole red and blue like lines around the movie again. Cause I remember, do you remember where they did Jaws? I think it's Jaws 3.
Yeah, there was 3D. Jaws 3.
With Louis Gossett Jr. in it, I think.
Well, what I used to do when I was really young, this is back when I lived in Idaho. There was one television station that would run on like Saturday nights or Sunday nights. I can't remember the specifics, but they would have 3D Kung Fu Theater.
Oh, awesome.
And you'd go to your local 7-Eleven,
yeah,
and you'd go buy like their hot dog or whatever, and they would give you the 3D glasses to watch. And so I, every like Saturday or Sunday night, we would at like 7 o'clock we'd watch 3D Kung Fu Theater.
Really?
And you know, there's somebody sticking like a bow staff in your face and wiggling it around. And, you know, that was like, as far as like 3D, I was really happy with that.
Yeah.
Because now they're using the polarized lens. So one lens is polarized one direction. Yeah. One is polarized in the other. And that's how it works.
Yeah.
There was a fun joke at the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special. Because I went to they did a movie theater.
Okay,
in 3D. So you wear the glasses and they're like, you know, there's a certain creature that's around that can disguise themselves as human, and if you want to see which one's which, close one eye and then look at their face, and if their lenses are black, then
they're
a Centauran or whatever.
Yeah,
and that was the joke, because obviously polarized lens, if you see everybody, then you can't see.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't that the dude's name that came and picked up Alex Ross in The Last Starfighter? Centauri.
Yeah, it was there was Centauri. Greg was the guy who picked him up.
Oh, okay. I can remember.
With the weird, like, the lizard alien dude.
Yeah. The dude always reminded me of the, what was it? The Enemy Mine.
Louis Gossett Jr.
Wasn't that Louis Gossett Jr. and Dennis Quaid?
I think so.
What happened to his brother, dude? Randy Quaid's just gotten like off the deep end, dude.
Yeah, he's lost in the Canadian wilderness somewhere.
Oh, is he? probably married a moose.
Well, him and his wife went nuts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they both went just gone. Yeah, last time I had heard, they were like squatting at somebody's house in Canada.
Oh, wow.
Then we just didn't hear anything about them anymore.
Because I heard he went broke or something like that.
He went broke and then just went crazy.
Good times.
And there was like, you know, he's talking about like some sort of like Hollywood headhunters were after him and
yeah.
all this kind of weird stuff. And you're just like, okay, you've obviously lost your, you've lost your marbles.
It happens. So anyways, you actually picked up some stuff yesterday. You went to a neat little thing yesterday also.
I went to Retropalooza 6, There's a couple things. This is probably the biggest Retropalooza that they've had. I don't mean in terms of like, they've been having it at the Arlington Convention Center ever since they started.
Yeah.
But as far as like the crowd, this was the biggest that I've seen them.
Okay.
Because like I took my wife with me. We went to Retropalooza 2. And there was like half the parking lot was full. So you could pick wherever you want to park at. And, you know, so we went and she wasn't really that interested in it. I don't know why she wanted to come. She's finally got to a point where it's like, yeah, it's your video game stuff. I don't really go.
Just let me know how much money you spend.
Yeah. And not even that. It's just like, yeah, just don't go crazy.
Yeah.
And that was funny.
She can't ever be happy. She's got to.
Once she's in, she's got to get out. Once she's out, she's got to get back in. Yeah.
She doesn't like closed doors.
Yeah, apparently.
she's on freeze.
Anyway, so, you know, we went. We could get in and out. It was not a big deal.
Yeah.
Then the 5, which was last year's, where I finally got to come back to it. And there was some more people, but there was still plenty of room in the parking lot.
Yeah.
This year I get there, the parking lot's full. There are parking cars around the parking lot. They're opening up overflow other parking lots. And just the crowd of people was huge.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I'm not, it, I was going to say it didn't affect me all that much. It didn't really, because we're used to cons. You kind of get used to like busy cons.
Yeah.
Just like running into people the entire time and being shoulder to shoulder. So that's kind of how it was for, you know, a good like 3 or 4 hours out of the day.
I think part of it is nowadays also is that a lot of people hear, oh, it's a convention, so I'm going to go, you know, or whatever. And it's like, do you even like anything that's going to be there? Like, you realize it's going to be about retro gaming and stuff like that. There might not be a lot of, you know, comics or long boxes for you to dig through or whatever. Yeah,
well, actually, they had plenty of... They had, like, 2 or 3 booths with comics to go through. And the toy vendors have always been kind of slim on that.
Yeah. I always like going just to, like, check stuff out. So I can't really say much. And plus, I do want to get into the retro gaming collecting again. But it seems like now is a bad time to take up on it because the whole, like, it's definitely, like, doubled, tripled, and quadrupled in popularity over the past couple of years. I think part of that's because of Ready Player One and possibly because of, like, all these arcades and things like that opening up of, like, Free Play and, like, Saturcade and all, like, this good stuff. So.
Well, the industry's cooled off a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not like, You're never going to go back to like the 90s where you could go buy a bag of like 20 Nintendo games for like $5.
Oh, yeah. You
know, that's how it was when I was back in like 99.
Yeah.
I still love these games. I'm going to play them. Everybody else is playing N64. I had this weird time frame where I was like buying old video games because I really liked the ones that were like the 2D video games over the 3D stuff. And I try to explain this to some people and they don't quite get it, because when you had N64, when you had PlayStation, the original PlayStation out, it was like, for me, it's like we took a step backwards.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the games were in 3D, but they played like crap. They looked like crap. When you could have
these. The movement was bad,
too. Yeah, the movement was bad. The best way I can explain it is, like, if you look at a game like Mortal Kombat 3, which was kind of becoming, like, the peak of, like, oh, man, we could take real people and put them in a video game. We could give them moves. We can give them combos. We can do all this stuff. We can make the backgrounds look really good. And then we went to Mortal Kombat 4. Where it was like, okay, you can move around in the 3D space, but everybody looks like crap and they don't look realistic at all anymore.
Yeah.
And so when those 3D games like Tekken and Virtua Fighter and stuff like that, there were people who were really obsessed with those games. And I was like, I just can't get into it. Give me my Street Fighter. Give me my, you know, old 2D Mortal Kombat. And so I never really, like, even though I had the consoles, I never really embraced the 3D systems all that much, and even to this day I'm still kind of like on some of it. So until they get to like photorealistic, like 4K, which is, you know, they're getting there, but they're still, even the really good 4K is, you still have that uncanny valley thing that you can't, that I can't get past.
It's funny, I've never been a huge fan of it's funny that you brought up Mortal Kombat, because like I've never been a huge fan of like Mortal Kombat. Always just seemed like there's too many combinations to have to, like, you know, if I was going to play Mortal Kombat, I'd always like try to remember everybody's like special move and stuff like that or whatever. Like, I remember, I think it was like Sub-Zero and, Scorpions, like theirs was pretty easy. It's back forward punch or whatever. And it was like, get over here. Or, you know, he'd do the ice thing and freeze dudes or whatever. But, like, I remember once me and my ex-wife rented, Mortal Kombat. I can't remember which one it was, but it had like a Mario Kart game attached onto the game.
That was like Destruction or I can't remember all the there. That was one of those. Mortal Kombat had lost its way.
Yeah.
And I remember those. They came out with like a two or three games, and they were trying to do whatever they could to make Mortal Kombat relevant.
Yeah.
And one of the things, there was a couple of things that they introduced. One is that they changed movesets.
Yeah.
Which was awful.
Yeah.
So like down forward punch wasn't the ice ball for Sub-Zero anymore.
It was
back forward down
punch. Oh yeah.
It was awful. And the other thing that they introduced was three different fighting styles per character.
Oh wow.
And so instead of just having like high punch, low kick, high kick, block, which is pretty easy to understand, now they introduced like Tai Chi and Jiu-Jitsu and Ninjutsu and Karate. And so every character had at least three different fighting styles.
Yeah.
And then you had to, if you were going to be good at the game, there was a combo that you could do to one, and then you'd have to chain that combo from one combat system into another. So I learned it for Sub-Zero, and I was like, screw this, I'm not doing this for like there's like 25 different characters, I'm not doing that for all the characters. So I learned how to do like one chain combo from system to system, and what I hated about it was the end of the combo chained into like the martial art that I couldn't care less about. And so then you had to like swap over to the right, to the correct one with like the R2 button or something.
Oh, yeah.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds just too difficult. It's kind of like with me, like what they've done with Madden. And I know you don't do football and stuff like that, but like the last Madden that I got, like I always enjoyed the NCAA football game a lot better than what I enjoyed Madden. And then they stopped doing NCAA football, blah, 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 blah. And then now this last thing of Madden, I got it like super cheap after like the Super Bowl. I think it's like $16 online or whatever. So I bought it. And then I remembered why I've gotten to where I hate Madden, because there's just so much crap that you got to do. It's like, you can't just catch the ball anymore. You throw the ball to the other dude, he doesn't just catch it. You've got to like decide what type of catch he's going to do and where you're going to place the ball and all like this crap. And it's like, dude, I'm not a professional football player. I just want to play games. Yeah. You know, like I don't care about all this stuff.
Yeah, the deflated ball catch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Coated in like resin catch.
You know, like. No, but, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, I was going back to the Mortal Kombat game. Me and my ex-wife, we rented it. And whenever you started saying that, I was like, oh, that's the reason why we hated it, is because you had all this other crap. But then they had that Mario Kart game attached onto it.
Yeah, the Mario Kart game's fun.
It was great. And that's all we did was sit there and play.
I think that was Deception. I think it was Mortal Kombat Deception. Well,
yeah.
I did get Mortal Kombat 9 for Xbox 360, and I enjoyed that because they pulled back a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was back to just like one martial art per character.
Yeah.
And they went back to a 2D instead of trying to like sidestep characters.
Oh, yeah. I remember when they did that to where it's like you could almost like, I mean, it was still like, almost kind of like 2D, but like you could rotate the camera around like the room or whatever. Yeah,
there was a button or some sort of like button input combination that you could do where your character would sidestep. So if somebody threw a fireball or, you know, something like that, you could step off to the side and it would miss you. And then the camera would have to reorientate to that side view so you could see both characters.
Yeah.
It was just obnoxious.
Yeah. It's a pain in the butt is what it is. So it was, it's like the whole, can't remember what the devil I was about to say just then. That drives me. I'm getting old, I guess. Like, because I had it seriously on the tip of my tongue and it just like fluttered out.
Well, Virtua Fighter did that. A lot of the 3D games did that. There was like a sidestep move you could do.
Oh, I was going to say, I remember what. Okay. Like, the sidestep would help you if you had that kid that you were playing against that would like do the one thing to stun you and then just constantly keep doing it over and over and over again so that way you wouldn't even get like a punch in because they're just going to like. Special you, and then special you, and then special you, and then special you, and the next thing you know, they're like, flawless victory. And you're like, well, I do that against the computer, so I guess, like, I guess it's alright for them to do it to me, but still, like, it just aggravates the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing with Mortal Kombat. So, like, with fighter people, you have fighter crowd, people who are just, that's what they're into is fighting games.
Yeah.
So with Mortal Kombat, you had what's called dial a combo. So the combo is always going to be the same no matter what you do, like two high punches, a mid punch, you know, something like that. With games like Street Fighter, that's where you got into more like creative, like you could do a combo and then you had to find like a linking chain to get into another combo.
Yeah.
And that's where those games
quit.
That's where like Mortal Kombat kind of started to fall apart for a lot of people, was especially in 3 when you had that combo system in where it was. If as long as you knew how to hit run and then hit your button combination, you could land that combo every single time.
Yeah. So what games did you get yesterday, man? Because you told me that you like, it sounded like you picked up quite a bit. I was like, heck yeah, dude.
I didn't buy a lot, but I'm working on, so there's a company called, there's a history lesson I'm about to give. All right. So I don't know if you remember back in the original Nintendo days. There was these black cartridges.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. Yeah, because you'd get the black cartridge. You'd be like, what? That's weird. With the Atari, weren't they like different shaped on the Atari cartridges? Like they had that like tapered off back end or whatever?
They had the tapered off back end. They were black and they were made with like a thicker plastic.
Yeah.
The company that did that was Tangen.
Okay.
Tangen is an offshoot of Atari.
Oh, okay.
So you have to understand there's like a huge amount of animosity between Atari and Nintendo, especially during this time frame when this stuff was coming out. For one reason, number one, is that Atari was the big boy with the big boy pants for a while, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot and actually was a big leading cause for the arcade or the video game crash of like 82-83.
Yeah.
And so Nintendo came along and they hustled, man. They really did to get the NES out to people. They had a crew of people like bringing them to department stores. Department stores were like, no, we don't want your video game console. They're like, it's not a video game console. It's an entertainment system. It comes with a robot. You know, they were doing all of this stuff to like get people back into video games. And it really was Nintendo back in 85 that brought the video games back into the public consciousness. So Atari, to kind of like compete with that, released their 7800, which was going to be the follow-up to the 5200. Well, Atari had gone by their own set of rules that they had done for years and years and years. And the 7800 just was not, could not compete against the NES. So the 7800 actually came out after the Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
And it was a crap console. It was basically just an upgraded 2600.
Yeah.
Which nobody wanted.
Yeah.
So Atari lost face with that.
Yeah.
And then Nintendo, when they came to the United States, they had to put in some security measures, and they did a couple of things to make their console relevant. So the big thing is,
was bugging me that the thing was like lopsided, and then of course I start messing with it, and the freaking gun falls off. So I'll get it later.
So anyway, Nintendo did a couple of things. So when the Famicom came out in Japan, which is their NES,
yeah,
they had cool games, man. They were like, they were about the size of a cassette. They were different colors. And but one thing that Nintendo never did was implement any kind of security measures. So people were pirating these games left and right.
Oh, okay.
And then Nintendo was like, oh, well, we'll come out with a disk system, which was horrible because it made it worse.
Yeah.
So people were just copying floppy disks of Nintendo
games. I was about
to
say, so guys, whenever he says disk system, we're not talking about compact disks. We're talking about
floppy disks.
The floppy disks. And was it the hard ones or the actual like floppy?
They had a smaller version of the hard ones.
Okay.
And I'd love to get my hands on one because what they did for the security was that the Nintendo logo on the top of it was carved out of it. And so there would be a pin that would drop through one of the letters to like keep the disc from being copied.
Yeah.
But what people were able to do was buy these duplicate discs and they would just like carve out where that hole was at. And then so it would drop and so they could just copy these games and play them. So Nintendo, in a way to like protect themselves, they came out with the NES 10 chip.
Yeah.
Which was the security chip. So whenever you popped in your Nintendo game and you got the blinking light where the game would like start up and then it would stop. It would start up and then it would stop. And you're like, then you blow in your game and screw up your game even more.
Yeah.
That was the NES 10 chip.
Oh, okay.
So the connection to the NES 10 chip wasn't good. So if the connection wasn't good with that chip, then it would reset the console.
Oh, okay.
So that's why you ran into that.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, though, is like we had issues, that exact same issue with our NES way back in the day. And I remember my mom, there was a number that you called to Nintendo. It was like a hotline, like a troubleshooting hotline or whatever.
Yeah, it was 1-800. It had Mario with like a wrench in his hand.
Yeah. And like that was actually their like fix to tell us to do was to like blow in the cartridges and all like that type of stuff. And then like, you know, blow in the cartridges because it might be dust.
Yeah.
And then if that's not doing it, then clean the cartridges with a cotton swab and alcohol. And then once you do put it in there, that's whenever you do the slide back and forth thing
Honestly, all you had to do was the slide back and forth, left and right.
Yeah.
Left and right until it made the connection. And that's all it was. The pins weren't lined up perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's all that actually was. But we've spent, I don't know how many gallons of spit kids have lost because Nintendo.
How many breaths I blew in the Nintendo game and how many times, because it wouldn't just be like slide it back and forth. It's like stick your finger in there and go, okay, let's try it again. Hit power. And you know, it's like sitting in the floor right in front of the TV or whatever it is. You know, it's supposed to be horrible for your eyes, but that's what we did.
Well, going back into why that was set up was all because in Japan, they just bootlegged the hell out of those games.
Oh, okay.
So, in the U.S., Nintendo became, one, they did the gray cartridges because they wanted to make them look uniform so they look like VHS cassette tapes.
Yeah. We are the German army, even though we are Japanese. We were part of the Axis of Evil.
Yeah.
We will assimilate everything and make it look the same.
So they did the cartridges, and then they did the NES 10 chip.
Yeah.
Pieces. Well, if you were going to release a game for the Nintendo, you had to buy all of that crap from Nintendo first in order to manufacture a game.
Good grief, man.
So they were getting, like, if a game sold or not. So they were making
money hand over fist.
Yeah, they were just, and that's still today, that's part of the reason why they have so much money is because back during the time of cartridges, they were having to, companies were having to buy the cartridge, buy the case, the gray yeah. box to put the games in. They were having to buy the chipsets to put the games on. And so Nintendo just made money.
Yeah.
Then Nintendo also added like other stipulations. You could only release 5 games a year.
Oh, wow.
So companies like Konami, who were like one of the best at that time, one of the best companies, they yeah. had to create Ultra. So when we got the first Ninja Turtles game, it was under the Ultra label.
Oh, okay.
That was a sister company of Konami.
Okay.
And so Nintendo had all of these like harsh rules put into place.
Yeah.
And then there was a chip shortage. So Nintendo started rationing chips. So companies that they liked got more chips than companies that they didn't give a crap about.
Yeah.
So this made all the companies pissed off. So Atari comes along. They get the license to do some really big stuff.
Yeah.
One, they get the license for Namco. Oh, so that's okay. your Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, stuff like that. Dig Dug. They didn't release Dig Dug in the U.S. But anyway, companies like that.
Yeah.
They also got the Sega license. Oh, so wow. if you ever wanted to play Shinobi on a Nintendo, you were playing it off of a Tengen cart. You were not playing it. You were not playing an official.
See, I don't even remember Shinobi being on Nintendo. I remember having to go to my buddy's house and play it on a Sega.
Yeah.
Same thing with, I think it was, well, no, Ninja Gaiden was on.
Ninja Gaiden was Nintendo.
Yeah.
Even though there was I want to say like in Brazil or in Europe, there was actually a Master System version of Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really cool. I'd like to get my hands on it, but I don't have that kind of money on me. and so, anyway, Atari gets these big, you know, at least these two big companies.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could play after, there was Afterburner on Nintendo, and there was a Shinobi on Nintendo from Sega. And and they had Gauntlet. So So Gauntlet was on Tangan cartridges as well. So they, in order to like avoid all this mess with Nintendo, because they found a different chip that could work, but they couldn't get it to work with the NES 10 chip that's in the actual console.
Yeah.
So they are trying to figure it out. They can't. So eventually they just go, "Oh, we'll pair up with Nintendo and do officially licensed games." So they did. They did about 3 games. So I have both versions of this, but there's a Gauntlet that's an official Nintendo release in the gray cartridge.
Yeah.
And then there's an unlicensed black cartridge version of Gauntlet. Same exact game, but in 2 different cartridges.
And is that a Tengen release then?
Yeah, it's a Tengen release.
Yeah.
So they get about 3 games in. Now that they're officially partnered with Nintendo, they're able to get certain privileges like patent information for the NES-10 chip.
Yeah.
So they get the patent information.
Oh, wow. And so they start making their own chips.
And they start making their own sets of chips.
Oh, okay.
And really peeve off Nintendo.
Yeah.
And so they end up, there's so many lawsuits between Nintendo and Tengen.
So it's kind of like Android and iPhone, or Samsung and iPhone then?
I mean, it could have been. There was, you know, lawsuits for Nintendo running a monopoly, essentially.
Yeah.
What's it called? There's another lawsuit that Tengen brought up against them. Then Tengen got, so Atari got the rights to do Tetris. But there was like some weird, thing in the contract.
Yeah.
So there's a Tengen Tetris.
Oh, that's really?
It's like supposed to be better. Well, it's the arcade version, so you can have 2 players playing at the same time.
Oh, wow.
But Nintendo took them to court because they didn't have the specific like console release privileges to release it.
Yeah.
So Nintendo went back against Tengen and like sued them, and they had to pull their remaining like Tetris games off. But I mean, it was back and forth between the 2 companies.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm a big fan of like anybody who's like willing to spit in the face of authority. And that's what Tangan kind of was.
Yeah.
So I collect these black cartridges. And so yesterday I was like, I was looking over my collection, and I was like, you know what? I'm only 4 games away from having a complete collection.
Did you make a spreadsheet?
No, I have a database that that I had actually built.
Yeah.
I learned how to program a database, and I made a database specifically for my game.
Sometimes you have to, man. Like, I've got a spreadsheet for mine. I might have to get you to make me a spreadsheet for my vintage figures, man, because, like, you got to, because there's, like, 80-something of those little dudes, man.
Yeah, you can't keep track of all of them. Luckily, there's only 20 games in the release, so it was easy to keep track of. But, so yesterday I was like, okay, well, here's some games I need. I need to get Roadrunner, which was an arcade port of the Roadrunner game, which wasn't that great.
Yeah. Talking about like Roadrunner from like Looney Tunes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There was actually a Looney Tunes Roadrunner game. It's you're not missing anything.
I've played it before. Yeah. I remember.
There is Tubin, which I actually really like.
Yeah.
Because you had like player one was a white dude in a tube, but player two was a blue guy in a tube.
We're trying to be PC. So
no, he was just a blue dude.
The blue guy covers everybody.
Yeah. And then there was a Sega game called Fantasy Zone.
Okay.
Which I was like, that's. I really wanted to find Fantasy Zone.
Yeah.
But I needed Roadrunner. I needed Tubin. I've looked for about 6 years for all three of these games. The last one that I need is obviously the Tengen Tetris.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Tetris because every con I go to, I find at least three copies of it.
Of the Tengen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tengen Tetris is not one I'm worried about. I just have to like lay down the cash for it.
Yeah. Is it pretty expensive then, I guess, or whatever?
Well, you know, I went yesterday. They had one for $60.
Good God.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
It's been going for over the past 2 years.
Why is it so expensive? Son of a biscuit eater. Sorry, guys. I just knocked the devil out of my pop filter, so that's what that weird noise is. So that one, like, if it's so readily available, if you can find it so easily, like, why is it so much more than the others?
That was the one that Nintendo took Tengen to court, and Tengen had to literally pull all of their copies from store shelves.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the one everybody wants, so everybody's on the lookout for that one.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So you can find it at conventions pretty easily because somebody's always going to have a copy of it.
Yeah.
Now, Tubin, I don't know why that one's hard, and Roadrunner, I have no idea why that one's hard, but I cannot find those. So I knew going to a con that I should have some luck finding those. But Fantasy Zone, that one has been completely, like, it was so hard to find. So I go to the con. I stumble upon Roadrunner. I stumble upon Tubin.
Okay. All right,
grab him. Good.
Yeah.
And from here on in, and then that's when I was like looking around. I was like, there's a Tetris. There's a Tetris. There's a Tetris.
Now, are those actual Tetris Tengen games, or are they like possible bootlegs?
No, they're the legit games.
Okay.
Like, you can pick up a Tengen cartridge and know that it's a Tengen cartridge
just
right away.
Just because of
the weight of it, the thickness of the plastic. Yeah, they're heavy duty. They're designed to, you know, last forever.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy. This whole time I'm working on filming a blog or a vlog.
Yeah.
So I'm concentrating on like filming stuff, but kind of keeping my eye out for other things. And the day's getting about where it's wrapping up. It's about 4:30. The con closes down at 5.
Yeah.
I'm like looking through this dude's junk and I'm like, Fantasy Zone.
Oh, wow.
It's the only Fantasy Zone that I've seen all day.
Yeah.
And in Nintendo collections, black cartridges stick out like sore thumbs.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So it's like, you should find like, Tengen stuff pretty easily.
Oh god, yeah. Well, like you said, it's got the taper on the back, it's black, and it's usually got a gold label on it.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
And so I'm just like, okay, awesome. I was like, how much is this? He's like, $20. I said, sold.
Yeah, mine.
Mine.
Yeah.
And that has been the only time ever that I have found a Fantasy Zone out. Saying the wild is kind of in a zoo.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's still technically considered the wild because you didn't order it online and specifically be like, I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even like finding stuff at a convention is still just as much fun as finding stuff at, you know, at a, at out at like a store or whatever. But you know, with the vintage stuff, to me, you've basically got to do that, though, just because it's either going to be in, like, specific specialty stores. Like, I would go to, like, for, like, my Star Wars stuff. There's a place in Fort Worth. There's a place in Allen. You know, those are basically the only two places that I'm going to go to be able to find my vintage figures unless I go to a convention or something like that. So that's why I always just go ahead and mention it and call it the Wild instead of just going to, like, eBay and being like, I want that one.
And even at a convention, Fantasy Zone, there was only one copy.
Oh, really?
That I could find.
Yeah. So, that's pretty freaking awesome.
So I was like, I got three of the four games that I needed, and I'm just now one game away from having a complete unlicensed collection.
And that's Tetris, huh?
Yeah. And I'm, like I said, I'm not worried about it because if I go to any event, like the Dallas Retro Gamers, the last one I went to that was at the Video Game History Museum.
Yeah.
Somebody had one for sale.
Really?
So I'm just like, I'm not worried about it.
Now, whenever the collectors get together, will they kind of give other collectors like a discount on like games and stuff like that? Where they're like, you know, I know it's going to a good home. So there's just some kid that's wanted just because he wants to play Tetris for 10 minutes and be like, oh, this one's not as fun as on the PS4.
Yeah, there's you can get buddy prices. I am not a social person.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to get those discounts.
Yeah.
But if you pair up, if you buddy up with people, you know, like collectors want to help other collectors out. Like,
yeah.
There's a community sense. There's a communal sense of like, all right, this dude's been looking for this game for, you know, whatever reason. And if I run into another copy, I've done it with some friends that I've made through YouTube and stuff like that, where they're like, hey, if you find this game, can you pick it up? Cause I can't find it in my area.
Yeah.
And that's another thing with, and I don't know about Star Wars specifically, but with video games, different regions have more games and less games than other regions.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I was talking to somebody and they're like, I can't find this Sonic game. And I'm like, we are swimming in this crap. Here you go.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and it's so strange because, like I said, we have tons of it, but this certain region, like Wisconsin, they can't find them.
That's weird, dude. Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. It is kind of the same. I mean, not necessarily with like the vintage figures, but it is with the modern stuff. Like I was actually talking to a dude on, Facebook who lives in Austin, and he was telling me, he's like, oh, you know, I'm freaking can't like get away from the Gamorrean guard, but I can't find, General Veers or, you know, Bespin Escape Leia. And I was like, dude, well, we got like Bespin Escape Leia and General Veers like just about all over the place, but you can't find a Gamorrean guard anywhere.
Well, and that has to do with distribution.
Yeah,
and exactly. That's awful.
Yeah.
But with retro games, it's like, I'm not sure how that happened.
Yeah.
Because these games were readily available in all areas.
Yeah.
It's just,
maybe they weren't getting a Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon up in Wisconsin.
That might be true, you know. They were like, well, we've got, you know, Family Matters, but we don't have... Because Urkel did the voice of Sonic for a long time.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. I mean, I guess I kind of hear it, but what was that guy's name? Steve something or other.
It was Jaleel White.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Steve was his Stefan.
Steve Urkel and then Stefan.
Yeah, Stefan. Dude, I don't know what's going on with my brain today. I guess it's tired.
It's 4 o'clock brain, dude.
It is 4 o'clock
after,
brain.
After 4 o'clock brain.
And it's like, it's going like, dude, you got to go to work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't. Well, only thing that's getting me through right now is the fact that I know like the next good amount of time that I get off is Thanksgiving. So right now I'm focused on Thanksgiving. And then after that is Christmas. And then after that is vacation.
Yeah, well, for me, that's, yeah, soon. I've got 2 weeks before I'm out to Ireland.
Yeah.
And I'm already...
How long are y'all going to be over there for?
We're going to be out there for a pretty solid week. We get it. We fly out Monday.
Yeah, flying into Dublin.
And then we're flying into Dublin. We get into Dublin at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Their time. So, I'm so excited about this.
Yeah.
For a couple reasons. One, I've never traveled internationally. Two, I get to officially be a time traveler because right. They are 6 hours ahead of us.
Yeah.
So I'm like excited. Like the little sci-fi nerd to me just like, oh, yay.
You're like, I'm going to be Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I'm going to take my sonic screwdriver with me, mama. You going to make me a costume?
My mama made me a costume.
That's what I was alluding to. Yeah, I'm glad you picked it up because that's what I was alluding to. But, and it was a Doctor Who.
Oh, but, I'm Doctor Who. That's one of the things, like, because the new Doctor Who's Jodie Whittaker. So yeah. Check.
So I was going to ask you if that Doctor Who thing you went to had Spitfires flying in outer space and stuff like
not,
that.
Not that one, because that was and, like, that was the Matt Smith, who was that Doctor during that time frame. That was right when he became the Doctor, so it was after Tennant.
Yeah.
Which who, like, okay, as Matt a Doctor Smith just Who... seemed
very blah.
As a Doctor Who fan, well, they changed writers.
Yeah, well, I remember
so,
that.
So, Davies was the writer through 9 through 10, and then he stopped, and then, I can't remember his name, picked it up and started with 11. And so, that's where we got Spitfires flying in space.
Yeah.
Spitfires in space!
Right, it sounds like it should be a Muppets thing.
Yeah, it does. And so, there's a new guy that's taking over this new Doctor Who, and his name's Chibnall. And Jodie Whittaker's the new Doctor, and so there's a lot of so you have people that are like, oh, this could be a chick Doctor. I'm like, let's give her a chance.
Yeah.
But her costume is hideous.
Oh, really?
She can talk in lower registers and sounds really good.
Yeah.
But from all the previews that I've seen of the new Doctor, she's like going high pitched, and you're like, oh. No.
Yeah.
Don't do that, please.
See, that's like whenever I was watching Doctor Who, I really liked Christopher Eccleston, even though he was only there. He was only the Doctor for like a season or something like
yeah,
that. Like it was only a very short run.
Yeah.
And I liked him because he was very serious and very intense and stuff like that. And then so whenever they got David Tennant, who was very like, kind of like free loving. Like, just kind of, he didn't have the intensity as Christopher Eccleston. So that, to me, that went together well. And so I enjoyed those two. And then when they did Matt Smith, I was just like, who? He just seemed, I don't know, maybe I didn't watch enough Matt Smith to really like make that much of a judgment call on it. But to me, he was very meh.
Yeah. And that.
And plus, after Blink, it's kind of hard to top that episode.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, that was the name of it, right?
Yeah. With Blink. The dude who wrote Blink was the one who actually took over the series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so he went to crap with the rest of it like that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. So 9 was intense.
Yeah.
Because there was this whole backstory that they hadn't covered with the Time Wars.
Yeah.
And like he had to basically commit genocide.
Okay.
And so that's where we're coming in at the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah, that's with Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah. So okay. he was really intense because he had just obliterated an entire like planet.
Yeah.
Two planets.
Well, he, like,
his home
out,
planet
like, an entire...
and the Dalek planet.
Okay.
So he was like really intense and kind of hard, like that was part of the character.
Yeah.
And then when Tennant took over, like the purpose of that Doctor was to bring the humanity back into him. We were getting into that phase with 9 before 10 took over, since he met Rose. So if you notice towards the end of the first season with the Ninth Doctor, he lightens up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so they attribute that in the writing. This is what made Davies such a great writer, was that he continued on and he explains why the Doctor has changed. And you could tell that he was changing from 9. And then when he changed to David Tennant's Doctor, it was because Rose was bringing humanity back into him, because he had turned into sort of this like cold, unfeeling alien being.
Yeah.
And then even towards, and what was really cool is that after the whole Rose stuff was done, the Doctor started reverting back into like sort of cruel evil Doctor a little bit.
Oh, really?
There was yeah, he gets evil to a point doctor. Where he's like, I can change time. I can make this thing happen. And it took like other companions to go like, you can't do that, dude. You can't just like flip this around and make this person live anymore.
Yeah.
Or do this thing where it's supposed to be, you know, written in time. You can't change that. You're not supposed to change that.
Yeah.
And there's a great episode towards the end of David Tennant's run where, like he ends up saving this lady and she's like, well, you know, I should have died with everybody else. And he's like, I didn't want it to happen. So you get to live.
That's cool.
And then she goes into her house and she commits suicide.
Whoa. And this was the David Tennant one?
Yeah.
I don't remember that episode.
Dude, yeah, it was one of the like last four.
Yeah.
I think she either commits suicide or she ends up dying because time won't allow her to continue on. It was dark.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was like, it was gray. Actually,
I think I remember that now. I think I do remember that.
Yeah, it was like, damn.
Yeah.
And it was just really good. But yeah, there was like the last few series. Because they didn't do the TV show had pretty much stopped, and they were doing just specials.
Okay.
So it was just like, there was like four specials before he left, and it was one of those where he was just like, I can do whatever I want. I'm the Doctor.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, it does seem like, in your opinion, does it seem like the Doctor Who fandom and fervor, or whatever you want to call it, has maybe calmed down a little bit, settled down just a wee bit? Because it seemed to me like you'd go to like a convention or whatever, and you'd see Doctor Who's all over the place and Doctor Who merchandise all over the place. It doesn't seem like it's as prevalent anymore. Like, it's not like as...
Here's what happened. So when 11 came around, you and I both were just like,
yeah.
Spitfires in space.
yeah. Skills, Daleks.
So for me, that was like, oh, what are they doing?
Yeah.
But one thing that they did really, really well with that series with Matt Smith was they promoted the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
There was a Doctor Who bus.
Oh, wow.
Whenever they were like, that was running around in England, they actually went to Comic-Con with that Doctor. They didn't do that with the previous two Doctors.
Yeah.
So they really embedded Matt Smith's Doctor in with the crowd, and kids loved it.
Yeah.
Girls loved it, oddly enough. So, I mean, I don't know how many times you've seen
it. Which was kind of odd, because he's really not the most handsome fella to look at, too.
No, I mean, he's kind of horse-faced. I can see where women were like, David Tennant, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I could...
Yeah, well, it's kind of like me. I'm like, dude, like, I can sit there and look at Johnny Depp and be like, he's one handsome son of a gun.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, I never... caught it with Matt Smith. I was always like...
Oh. He was always like goofy, his ears stick out. Yeah. So it was just like...
Fez. Yeah. More Fez. Come on, dude.
Fezzes are cool.
Yeah.
No, bow ties are cool. Yeah. So, but what was strange is that we did get sort of this embrace of like a lot of women really liked the Matt Smith Doctor. And
yeah.
So you can comb the internet and you can find, I don't know how many women cosplaying as the 11th Doctor.
Yeah.
Then we got the next dude, and I got my 4 o'clock brain too.
Yeah.
The next dude who I really, really liked, and he was a huge Doctor Who fan, and he was perfect for the role of Doctor. But.
He was older.
Yeah, the people who had just come in on 11 didn't understand the whole like regeneration thing.
Oh, and how
when you get a new Doctor, you get a new personality. It's really a completely different show as far as that person is concerned. Now, they try to bring in elements from the previous Doctors to bring them to kind of bring some coherence to the story.
Yeah.
But they dropped off a lot when the older dude took over.
Yeah.
And my problem was he was wasted on that series because Moffat, that was the writer, Moffat wrote him so poorly. And it took about a season and a half for him to get any kind of footing.
Really?
And by that point in time, it was time for him to go. And so now they've got Jodie Whittaker coming in, and I'm like, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I want
you stay over there.
I want Star Wars to be good. I want Star Trek to be good. I want Doctor Who to be good.
Yeah.
And Star Trek has gone to crap. You know how I feel about Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Doctor Who has been crap for 11 and 12, which is horrible.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping Jodie Whittaker does really well. I'm hoping that they write her really, really well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they need to go get Davies back and start writing stuff again.
Didn't he move up to like a more like a producer style role or something like that, or director?
He's
role?
Gone. He went on to go write other television shows. Okay. Being a showrunner, period, for any show. But especially Doctor Who is extremely taxing.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Because they're filming, they film straight.
See, Michael should be here for this right now because he's the Doctor Who knowledge person in 2BT. I don't really know hardly anything about Doctor Who, but,
it's just one of those things like everybody who's involved with the production of Doctor Who, eventually you either burn out or you have to quit when you're still like awake.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just not going to do it. Tenet ran for a decent four seasons. So he to me is still always going to be like a fan favorite of the new Doctors.
Yeah.
I'm always going to be a fourth Doctor dude. And he ran for like, I want to say like 7 years.
Holy crap.
He loved the character.
Yeah. See, I can't do the old Doctor stuff. It's just the old dad.
No, like, I mean, no budget.
I've got a theory that I share with Nick that we say like I like the American version of The Office better than the English version of The Office. If they took Doctor Who and made it in America, like I would probably like that one better.
But they'd
probably have like a freaking laser sword and a freaking laser gun.
They kind of did that with 8. So they were going to when the 8th Doctor was made.
Yeah.
They had done a television movie, and it was shot in Canada.
Oh, okay.
So they were really trying to, at that point in time, they were really trying to bring Doctor Who into the American consciousness.
Yeah, they were trying to bring it a boot.
And so they introduced a little bit of romance.
Yeah.
This was the first time we had the Doctor kissing somebody.
Oh, wow.
They were Roberts, the brother Roberts. Not Julia Roberts' brother.
Oh, yeah, Eric.
Eric Roberts.
Yeah.
Eric Roberts was the master.
Oh, really?
He was the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, they were really trying to push Doctor Who into an American audience, and they just didn't take it. And so they only made that one episode.
Quit.
And, but yeah, Doctor Who is just one of those things that's been up and down, and I really want this Doctor to be good. Problem, and I'm gonna get in, man. I might get you guys in trouble.
No.
the problem is they brought in more of like a feminist side of it.
Yeah.
So the last few episodes of Doctor Who have been like they went on to Gallifrey, and there was like a dude who got shot and killed, and then he regenerated into a woman. She's like, oh, I'm finally back. How do you men deal with such an ego and stuff like that? So there's like little snipes towards the end of this last run that was like, oh, that would be upsetting, man. Just a little bit. And there was a lesbian character. Don't care.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. But every episode she had to be like, well, I'm not into men. And it's okay. What was funny, they did do an episode where she was with a group of legionnaires.
Romans.
Yeah, she was with Romans.
Okay.
And so she's like, this dude was talking to her, and she kind of thought that he was coming on to her.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I'm not into dudes. And he's like, oh, you're like this dude, our guy over here, he's not into women. And I'm like, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. We're Romans. We don't care.
We're Romans. We don't care.
Yeah.
So that was like the one thing that was good out of that. But almost every episode she had to kind of like,
I had to brush put off it in a your dude face. And, yeah. And like, I'm it gets like, kind of annoying whenever it does that in shows and stuff like this. Like, nobody really cares anymore, man.
So you don't have to
sit there and put it in their face.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of people who are worried that this is going to be like, oh, I'm finally a woman and it's good. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe I've been a man for so long and this is so odd. Yeah. So as long as they don't play up that angle of it, because the doctor should never have, and this was something that I hated about Matt Smith's run, was that the doctor should never have a romantic relationship.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say a menstruation cycle. No. I was like, oh, dude.
The doctor can do whatever,
right?
Whatever the doctor wants to do.
Yeah.
But that was kind of my contention with some of the David Tennant stuff, was they brought sort of a romance. They played with it with Tennant.
Yeah.
With Rose a little bit. I was like, you guys are treading on a dangerous area.
Because
he never had a romantic relationship with his companions. It was always like, he's a teacher, they're a student kind of relationship.
Yeah. And well, she was a companion for a really long time,
yeah,
too.
And so, in this and they resolved it by the end, by creating a duplicate doctor who had human DNA. And the Rose went off with that doctor to alternate dimension.
Yeah.
And so that's how they kind of solved that. So she still ends up with the doctor. The doctor gets to have the romantic side of it. But the doctor, the one that we've been following, never really stepped over that line.
Yeah.
And then with Matt Smith, we had River Song, and they stepped over that line where he's got a wife and she knows his – you know, his history, but it's out of sync. Like, she doesn't know, she's out of time with him. So they're running weird. And so they tried to introduce this sort of like forced relationship, and it was really bizarre. And so now I'm hoping they're done with that. Like, I really hated the River Song stuff.
Yeah.
I liked the character. The woman who played her and the character herself was really cool. They just should have made her a different Time Lord.
I can dig it. Cool. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us, man.
Yeah, I could talk about Doctor Who and...
I couldn't.
Nerdy stuff all day long.
I'm over here going like, okay, well, Doctor Who. I watched two seasons of it. Well, I watched two Doctors, not two seasons. That's about it. Anyways, if you want to find Adam, go to Retro Repies on YouTube. Check out his videos. I know you still stream live every Friday on Twitch, right?
I've been trying to, but I haven't been very good at it. So
you suck.
There will be a new video about Retropalooza coming out within the next week.
And that's going to be on YouTube?
YouTube.com/RetroReprise.
Cool. Of course, if you guys want to find us during the middle of the week, you can email us at Gmail or 2btshow@gmail.com. That's 2btshow@gmail.com. If you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, that's at 2BT Show. And of course, that's the number 2BT Show. That's for both those emails. Go by nerdylegion.com/audible. Sign up for Audible. I think it's 2 weeks free now. It's been so long since I signed up, I don't keep up with how they do it. But whenever you sign up, you get 2 free books, and you get you don't have to keep the subscription to keep the books. So, but the deal is, you're going to keep the subscription because it's freaking awesome. I've been going through The Expanse and this Spell, Swords, and Stealth series. Spell, Swords, and Stealth is really neat because it's written from the point of view of NPCs. And in fact, the first book is called NPCs. So it's really cool. It's a different aspect on it. And if you ever played D&D, it's going to be one of those that you're like, hey, this is kind of neat. Or if you've ever played any sort of role-playing game on, you know, video games or whatever, because it's like some NPCs that just decide to, take up the quest and sally forth themselves. I think that's going to do it. I think that's all. I think it got covered everything there. I don't know. I should really have notes that I read all this stuff from, but I don't. It's always from the top of my brain. So if I ever screw anything up, that's why.
If you ever need a hint, man, you can just go read all this stuff ahead of time, record it.
And just tag it on.
And then just tag it on at the end. So
yeah,
you didn't have to
but
think
that's,
about
that's,
it.
That doesn't give my personal flair to it.
I'll go out and get some audiobooks.
Yeah.
that's a thing.
Yeah, well, it's like I love talking about Audible because I use it every day.
Audible's cool.
It is. With that being said, I almost call myself Adam.
I'm Dave.
2BT, signing out. What goes up must come down, but not me, clown. I cut him. Crack a speaker when I'm pumping. So jump in and watch your ears start humming through the block. And don't forget to boom shock, shock a lot. Well, damn, do it all. Can I rock? Why wait?